Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, generous friends. Welcome to Heart-Centered Giving, where we talk about philanthropy that is aligned with your values and true passions. I'm Catherine Pike in Larkspur, California. My hope today is to give you access to your inner philanthropist and to help you achieve impact with philanthropic investments that matter to you. My inaugural guest for this program is Deborah Quilter, a dear friend who is a well-known writer and teacher of yoga. In addition to writing two pioneering books, Deborah has taught nationally and internationally at yoga conferences and teacher trainings. She is here today to talk to us about the yogic practice of seva, selfless service. The topic of seva piqued my interest because not long ago we were having a conversation and Deborah started explaining it to me. I got excited because I sensed instantly that many people in the philanthropic community could benefit from learning about this. We got to talking about how you do this, and before I knew it, I was launching this radio show. Welcome, Deborah. Can you explain the practice of seva for our listeners?
Well, hello, Catherine. I'd be thrilled to talk about seva to your listeners. I am so thrilled to be on your show, and congratulations on heart-centered giving, which is such a fabulous idea. I'd like to preface this a little bit by talking about yoga in general, because I think that it's not that well understood in the West, and then we'll get actually to this specific practice of seva, or as it's known as selfless service, and some people call it karma yoga. And I'd also like to say that I'm giving you my own opinion. You can talk to many different yogis and they'll give you their own take on it, and I'm just giving you my very own. Let's begin by clearing up some misconceptions about yoga that are widely believed in the general population in the West.
Good.
Most people
Sounds like that.
So happy to have this platform. Most people think of yoga strictly in terms of asana, and those are the yoga poses that you see on the cover of the yoga magazines. And the physical practices of yoga are only one part of a larger system that has eight branches. So you can be a highly evolved yogi without ever doing a single yoga pose in your whole life. In fact, yoga is essentially a spiritual practice, and the physical poses are meant to help you achieve a healthy, pain-free body so that you can calm your mind sitting in meditation. So asana, the yogic poses, should be as comfortable as stepping into a warm bath and done in a very relaxed and unstrained manner. And unfortunately, a lot of people really push. They use yoga more like a gym routine. And they thereby break the first rule of yoga, which is non-harming. It means you don't harm other people, but you also don't hurt yourself trying to achieve a yoga pose that you're not ready for or that isn't appropriate for you.
Oh, that makes good sense.
It does, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And there'd be so many fewer injuries if people would just practice that one. It's the first rule of yoga, non-harming, ahimsa. So I'd also like to say that while yoga is a spiritual practice, it's not a religion, and therefore it can be practiced by people of any faith or no faith at all.
Oh, that's wonderful to know.
Isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So I've been studying yoga since I was about 18 when I was living in San Francisco. And initially I taught myself from books, and I loved what I was learning. But every time I took a class, I would find myself getting injured because none of the teachers that I studied with had explained that first rule of yoga to me. Do no harm.
Right.
So it wasn't until many years later when I was living in New York that I finally found a teacher who honored the concept of ahimsa and told me that yoga poses shouldn't hurt. And suddenly, the poses that I'd done for years became a sheer pleasure, and I made great progress. And he also told me about the yoga philosophy, and these are called yamas and niyamas, and I'll get to that in a minute, but including santosha, that's my favorite, and that's gratitude for what you already have. And at that point, I fell in love. I started reading everything I could lay my hands on about yoga philosophy, and my practice began in earnest.
Lovely.
So, yeah, the yamas and the niyamas are, they're kind of like a blueprint for decision-making, and they can be applied to any kind of quandary you might find yourself needing help with. I mean, I use it all the time. And the reason why I bring them up is because it really matters regarding seva, because anybody who's ever tried to serve others knows that it's one of the most complicated things you can possibly do. It can bring up moral and ethical dilemmas. When are we helping? When are we actually harming? You know, what happens when a drunk approaches you on the street? Should you give him money, knowing that it's going to be going to drugs or alcohol? So that's where it is a dilemma, and that's where these yama niyamas can really help clear things up. At least that's what I've found. And I think it's really important with seva, because I was just listening to someone the other day, and she said, sometimes people get a thrill out of helping victims, and I don't think that's a good thing. You know,
no.
People can feel superior; they can feel like they're the hero, and then they don't have to look at their own issues.
Right.
So, anyway, people come to yoga for flexibility, relaxation, freedom from pain, all kinds of health-related reasons. And you can certainly get all of that from yoga. It can lower your blood pressure. It can help you with thyroid disease. It can help diabetes. It can help with arthritis. The list goes on and on. It can help with insomnia. It can help you with so many musculoskeletal issues, all of those things. But yoga is primarily a spiritual practice. And the first two rungs of yoga are the principles of yama and niyama, which are essentially precepts to live by. And when skillfully applied, these principles can be invaluable when it comes to making life decisions. So the yamas are first, and they have to do with your conduct regarding other people. And the first one is ahimsa, nonviolence, non-harming, non-injury, which we talked about. The second one is satya. That's truthfulness, honesty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, are you being honest with yourself about your reasons for giving? Have you investigated and done due diligence for the charity that you're giving to? Can you think about
that's so applicable to philanthropy. I love it.
Can you think of some other ways that satya might apply?
Yeah, I mean that's really fascinating to wonder about your motives beyond just wanting to do good. You want to have impact as well. But tell us more, Deborah.
Okay.
Please.
All right. So the third one is ostia, and that's non-stealing or abstention from theft. That means you don't take what doesn't belong to you, but it could also apply for not taking the credit for the work that someone else has done. Can you see where I'm going with
right.
this, Catherine?
Absolutely.
Have you ever known anyone who's taken the credit for something that someone else has actually been responsible for doing?
I think we all have known such
yes.
people.
Yes. So you see, these things are just really on target. Okay, so the fourth one is brahmacharya. And usually, well, that can be interpreted in a number of ways. Traditionally, it was sexual continence, you know, being careful about who you had sexual union with. But mm-hmm. nowadays, it's being interpreted also as moderation.
Oh.
and continence. And I think it's a really important idea. You know, are you doing too much? Are you giving so much to other people and not thinking of yourself and your own needs? Are you out of balance that way?
Oh, that's really intriguing, because so often many of us do spend too much time helping others and we ignore our own needs. What a good
exactly.
point, Deborah.
Yeah, well, it's not me, it's yoga. So anyway, the fifth of the yamas, which are the conduct with other people, is aparigraha. And then, this is so fascinating, it's non-possessiveness, non-grasping, non-acquisitiveness, and non-greed. Don't be greedy.
Wow.
So in terms of philanthropy, have you known anyone who was sort of greedy, maybe about getting credit or getting accolades, or, you know, the sort of thing that I'm speaking of here? Maybe not giving more for their own sense of self-aggrandizement rather than actually doing something for someone else.
Well, even more than that, it might be possible that one will insist that it's my way or the highway, that the other person's ideas aren't as valid as one's own. And I think what we know in philanthropy is that you cannot do for others. You have to allow people to do for themselves. So every voice is important.
So it could be a way of control,
yes.
You know, non-possessiveness. And there's another aspect, and this I love, it's very Zen. You know, just sort of giving and then letting that go. You know, so it's sort of like a footprint disappearing when the tide comes in on the sand.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Ooh, lovely.
It's giving without being attached to what you've just given.
Oh,
it's
I love that. That is really important.
Yeah.
That's really important.
I love that, too. I mean, it's so beautiful because it's really the essence of selfless service. You're not thinking about yourself. You're thinking of the other person, and then you're letting that go.
Yeah.
You're not attached. So I love this whole concept, and I love it's just beautiful to me. So
I do
moving,
as well because – go ahead, please.
No, you go ahead. I've got time.
Well, I was thinking that so many people think philanthropy is putting your name on a building when you've given a huge multi-million-dollar gift, and so many of us can't afford to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I love what you're saying. So please continue.
Yeah, okay. So the niyamas cover your internal state, and the first one is saucha, and that means purity. That's sort of like having a pure heart, you know, pure intention. The second one I talked about was santosha, and that's contentment and gratitude for what you already have. Ah, beautiful.
How important is that?
Yes.
Wow.
And then there's tapasya, and that means fire, restraint, or self-discipline. And that's sort of, fire is a purifying element, and that could be, you know, when things happen that don't go your way, you're kind of sitting in the fire of it, and just being able to restrain yourself at that point and sort of ride things through is really important, and that requires self-discipline. And then there's svadhyaya, which is self-study. It could be reflection on sacred scriptures, inner exploration, and the contemplation of one's own actions. So if you're looking, what have your actions wrought? Can you see the action that you took and what is happening now because of that action? And you can learn a lot by this svadhyaya practice, this self-study. You know, what actually happened from what you did. And then the last one I love, it's Ishvara Pranadana, and that means surrender to God or surrender to the greater power or the universe or what is. And that's kind of letting go, and it's usually the point at which people start healing, I found in my own work with yoga therapy. because I use yoga in my work. I'm a yoga therapist, and I help people learn how to move without pain and do all kinds of things. And I usually find when they've reached that stage, they start healing. So anyway, the interpretations of the yama niyama are wonderful, and it's a wonderful exercise, as we just experienced when you chimed in, to argue various viewpoints about them. And the more you discuss them, the more possible meanings reveal themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they just give us a great sense of peace and wise counsel on living and what attitude to take on our problems, and provide a beacon of light for our way. So you asked me about the gifts of the yama niyama, and my teacher, Mukunda Stiles, said that when nonviolence is mastered, one creates an atmosphere in which violence ceases. And people, it really happens. You don't argue around someone who's deeply peaceful. When truthfulness is practiced, one's words and deeds exist in service to that truth. And abstaining from stealing, ostia, when that is mastered, what you consider precious is drawn to you.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a very funny story about Mahatma Gandhi. He was robbed of his favorite watch on a train in India. And 6 months later, the thief came back, threw himself at his feet with the watch, and became his disciple. So when you practice non-stealing, non-greed, and that sort of thing, things just start going your way. And I can definitely attest to this. So now we need to talk about seva.
Yeah.
So I'm going to define it by a quote from Yogi Bhajan. And he said, if you do some service and say, I served, then you have totally missed the point. Service is when you feel honored by doing something. You feel it within your own self.
Lovely.
That is service. When I stand before my consciousness, I feel good, and I say, well, I am so blessed that I could do that. That's seva.
Perfect.
Isn't that beautiful?
Oh, it's very beautiful and so applicable to philanthropy, I think. There were three areas that I thought had particular resonance for philanthropists. And is this a good time to ask you about that, Deborah, or would you like to continue explaining more about seva?
I think, you know, we're kind of getting to the end. Maybe we could do another segment and follow up with your questions.
Ah, what a good idea. No,
and
I think it's great.
Then, because I think it's good to really explain this whole thing a little bit more deeply, and then more questions will probably arise.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of karma yoga?
Yes, I think we've all heard of karma. Yes.
Yeah, it's often used interchangeably with the concept of seva. And purists will make a distinction. Seva is often translated as selfless service to others, whereas karma yoga is translated as the yoga of action. And that means finding inner peace no matter whether you're running a corporation or doing the dishes. You know, you're doing your work for a greater purpose. And it really can be applied to anything that you do, any interchange that you have with someone else. And the thing is that when you perform either seva or karmic yoga, you do it without any expectation or attachment to the results. So here are some examples of what seva could look like.
Okay.
And these are my own feelings, so if someone else argues, that's more to talk about, and that's fine. Seva feels like a mutual joy. It's that light, bubbly feeling that you get in your heart that lifts you about 2 inches above the ground. It's like when you help that woman drive her way out of the riverbank when she was stuck.
You were so thrilled about that. Yes,
yeah.
I was. Thank you for remembering.
And seva feels like an honor.
Mm-hmm.
And an act of seva might feel like a great gift to the person you're serving, but it will feel like a bigger gift to you, probably.
Mm-hmm.
And then here are some examples of what seva is not. It's not necessarily about giving away money, although if it were done in the right spirit, it could be. Seva is not doing acts of charity so that you can feel superior to the people you are serving or make yourself look good.
Mm,
Seva is not helping people who don't want to be helped, whether they like it or not.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes helping can be a terrible form of interference. Sometimes it's better to let people figure things out on their own. And many times they should be helping themselves, maybe with you cheering. Seva is not martyrdom, manipulation, guilt, being used as a doormat, or tolerating bad behavior. Seva is not about being holier than thou. And it's not about getting your name in the paper, winning awards, or having buildings named after you. And it's
good.
Not about you focusing on other people's problems so that you can ignore your own.
Hmm.
So it brings up this issue of non-attachment when I brought that up earlier. And that's one of the most difficult concepts for me to understand. But that idea of just giving and letting it pass and not thinking about it anymore, giving without any expectation, is, I think, one of the hallmarks of that. I mean, I remember one time I was, I can't remember the circumstances, but I'll never forget this man. There were a whole group of people eager to go through a doorway, and he stood there with this wonderful smile lighting up his face, holding the door for everyone.
Aww.
That was Seva. He was... It's so happy to be holding the door for all these people, many of whom never even noticed he was doing that, didn't thank him, but he was beatific in his smile. It was really wonderful to see. And,
lovely.
And I just have one more quote, and I think then we're probably out of time, but this is from Alan Reeder, and he said, "So what's the difference between karma yoga and what might be called ordinary volunteering?" And he said, "Ordinary volunteering is often performed, despite the volunteer's altruistic cover story, to fulfill the ego's need to alleviate guilt, seek praise or respect, prove our power, to save people, and so on. Inherently, it centers on unequal relationships, pulling someone up from the depths or fixing them in some way. It also involves a negative judgment because a helper's ego can only conclude based on the evidence that ego understands that the ego is superior to those who receive its help. They're dirty, I'm not. They're addicts, I have self-control. If those being helped sense that they're being judged, it only increases their pain." So this is a perfect example of how karma yoga or seva teaches us about ourselves. And that's why every little thought that we think matters.
Oh, Deborah, this is so important. Thank you so very much for this essential look at seva yoga. And we certainly want to learn more. And you have been the perfect inaugural guest for Heart-Centered Giving. For those who are listening, if you want to learn more about Deborah and her important work, you can go to her website. It is, correct me, Deborah, if I don't have this right, but it is beyondergonomics.com. Is that correct?
Right. Yeah, or they can just Google my name, Deborah Quilter, and they'll find their way to one of my websites. They can
Wonderful.
Google Deborah Quilter Yoga. Or they can call you.
Yes, you can call me or you can email me at larkspurpike at gmail.com. And please do. Please send some questions in and for the next show. And thank you all, too, for your indulgence of my, in particular, nervousness of this new show. But it's very, very exciting. And I'm just so happy that Deborah could be with us today. Thank you so much, Deborah.
Thank you for having me, Catherine. It was wonderful to talk to you.
Certainly our pleasure. Take good care and catch you all next time. Bye.